This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I'll welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our feature text this week is Mark 5, verse 9. It says, "Then Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' 'My name is Legion,' he replied, 'for we are many.'" I have to confess this week that the story we're going to be looking at here in Mark 5 is, I consider, it's one of the most bizarre, and it's one of the most difficult sections of the four Jesus narratives for us to contemplate. And most of us, in our naturalistic worldview, we're going to struggle to even entertain this story long enough to perceive and understand what the whole point is underneath this story. What is it that this story is trying to say? The demonology framework that's present in this story, for a lot of people, it causes a knee-jerk reaction. And to those whose outlook is scientific, it's even more of a knee-jerk reaction. But what I want to ask you this week is not to chuck the story yet. I want you to look at it more anthropologically or more sociologically, and I'll explain what that means as we go through it. But the demonology of the story is present. We can't deny that. In fact, it authenticates this story, if you think about it, as having a very early origin in the Jesus Revolution, back into the first century. But when one understands the point of the story and then sees that it has such an early date, what this story does is it gives us a window into what the early Jesus community really was about. And also calls to us to rediscover this point for ourselves today. So let's jump into it. Let's try to take it apart. And for those of you who are going to be wanting to look this story up in your own scriptures, it's found in Mark 5, 1 through 20, and in Luke 8, 26 through 29. But we're going to be looking at Mark's version of it. "They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart, broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, 'What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me.' For Jesus had said to him, 'Come out of this man, you evil spirit.' Then Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' 'My name is Legion,' he replied, 'for we are many.'" Now, there are three details that if we're going to understand this story, we cannot miss these right from the beginning. And they are in order. Number one, no one was strong enough to subdue him. We find that first in this story. Number two, this man cut himself with stones. And then number three, its name, whatever it was inside of this man, its name was Legion, for we are many. And let's start putting the puzzle pieces on the table. We're going to start off with number two. This man was cutting himself with stones. Scholars have seen in this what they call auto-lapidation. Lapidating is the act of pelting or killing with stones. It's what the Bible calls to stone someone. Now, if you step back and look at the entire forest, all four of the gospel narratives, what can't be missed is that this is an activity that the gospels always attribute to the crowd that is stoning a victim. You can find this in Matthew 21:35, Matthew 23:37, Luke 20, verse 6, John 8, verse 7, John 8:59, John 10:31 through 33, and John 11:8. And what this man is doing to himself is auto-lapidation. He has the crowd inside of him, the legion inside of him, the many inside of him, and he's self-stoning, so to speak. And why would this man be doing this to himself? The answer, I think, once again, is found in number three. Whatever it is that has taken over this man, its name is Legion, for we are many. This story, I think, fits perfectly well with the thread that runs through the entire gospel narratives, that it's the many that always are doing the stoning. And it's always the majority, always the crowd, the group, that engages in this form of capital punishment where the group throws stones at a person until they die, until death ensues. And this man is basically the embodiment of the collective violence of these crowds. The crowd, or the many, is embodied in this story in one person. And this in front of us, this story, is how Jesus delivered this man from legion, from participating in the many, from being taken captive or held in captivity to the many. And what we have to understand, too, before we even move on, is that, number one, the legion or the crowd, the many, whatever it is that's inside of this man, remember, it cannot be subdued. It can't be chained. They tried to control it, and they couldn't do it. It may help to realize that what's true of the crowd many times in the Gospels is right now, according to this story, true of this man. This man, again, is the embodiment of the crowd or the legion. So in order to understand what's going on inside of him, we have to pause, we have to back up, and we have to ask ourselves how crowds or the many actually work. Let's look for a moment at the mechanics of crowd, many, or legion behavior. Throughout history, societies have faced moments in which their coherence and their unity is threatened. And in these times of conflict, in order to keep a society from coming apart at the seams, scholars have witnessed a strange phenomenon that often takes place. A society will regain its unity and solidarity, typically by finding a common enemy to unite around and blaming for their society struggles. The many that have historically managed their societal rivalry, their competition, and their disunity by, instead of turning their violent tendencies on one another, they come together, transforming their violence towards one another into a collective violence against an other that restores among them a unity, a coherence that's centered in them together now being against a common enemy. In short, society finds unity in finding a common enemy. And in collective violence, a society's violence becomes collective by choosing someone they can all together come against. They find unity in agreeing on who they are against. If violence is not collected together and directed toward a common enemy, and this is the way of sacrifice, remember, that Jesus references in other places, the society's violence will turn on the society itself, and it will destroy itself. And we'll talk about more on this in a moment. Now let's get back to the demoniac. The man here, remember, is the embodiment of the crowd, the legion, or we are many. He is simply the containment of all of this in one individual. And where the crowd is able to redirect its violence collectively against another, this man being alone has turned the violence on himself. This is why we see him cutting himself in the auto lapidation. And we'll see this more clearly in a moment when we get to the pigs. But remember, number one, this violence cannot be subdued. Whatever it is inside of this man named Legion, it is the same thing that's true of the crowd or the many. And it cannot be bound. It cannot be chained. It cannot be subdued. The violence of the crowd cannot be overcome. A crowd can never collectively free itself of its own violence. A society has only one of three options. The society can allow the violence to escalate until the society tears itself apart. The society can redirect, and they do this unconsciously, but collectively they redirect their violence on a minority whose absence would least diminish the overall community and restore unity as everyone unites against this minority. Or the third option, is that someone from outside of that society, and in this story it's Jesus, can come in and remove the violence from the society one person at a time. And what we've just laid out here is exactly why we have this story. What many times is missed is that what's going on inside of this man is really what has happened on a larger scale in the story between the society this man used to belong to and this man himself. The way this region had managed their societal rivalry, their competition, their disunity, was by, instead of turning their violence on one another, remember, it can't be managed, or it can't be prevented or controlled, they manage it, they come together and just redirect it, transforming their violence into a collective violence against this man. Jesus came to create a new humanity, remember, a new crowd, so to speak, that united around the way of mercy rather than sacrifice, the way of mercy and love towards our enemies or toward the other, rather than a common hatred. Jesus came to remove humanity's paradigm of us versus them. And Jesus begins his work of saving in this society, in this story, by first turning this region away from the way of sacrifice to the way of mercy by rehumanizing, and I know that's not a word, I'm making it up here, but by rehumanizing the very one the crowd has sacrificed or purged. And in this case, it's the demoniac. And this fundamentally causes them to reassess their entire way of life. But we'll get to that in the end of the story too. So let's proceed through the rest of the story and see if we're on the right track so far. The story says he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out, went into the pigs. The herd was about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake, and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Now, being a mostly Greek region, which was more Gentile than with very few Jews, pigs were a farming commodity in this society. And why do we have this bizarre detail about pigs running off of a cliff? The pigs or the animals, they become infected, remember. Let's think about what we've covered so far with the legion or the crowd mechanism. They become infected with the legion or the crowd, along with the violence that was just in this man. And being pigs and having no one to turn that violence against, the herd runs and hurls itself off of a cliff. It's self-destruction. In this story, it's the crowd or the legion that comes out of the man, goes into the pigs, and goes and throws itself off the cliff. If people aren't freed from what's at the heart of this demon, the crowd, which has temporarily found peace and unity in purging a victim from its homogenous society, it will eventually run itself off a cliff, just like these pigs did. The same demon or demons that caused the crowd to throw stones at others will stone or destroy itself if it doesn't find a victim for the crowd to come together against instead. And that which drives the crowd to collective violence against a minority, remember, if it's not remedied in the long run, it will destroy that society if it cannot break free. Now let's finish the story. When the society saw that they had been sacrificing or purging or excluding, marginalizing from their society, when they saw that this man was restored through Jesus to a place of reintegration within their society, and don't miss this, their unity and their peace that they had found in coming together against this man was now starting to be threatened. Their unity was dependent upon him being their scapegoat. And when he became reintegrated, they had no more scapegoat. They had nothing to find their unity in coming against. And this, in effect, was turning their way of life, their stability, their worldview, their sacrifice on its head. They're now forced to see the one that they had been collectively sacrificing as a fellow human being, one just like themselves. Jesus had unobjectified this man. He had dehumanized this man. He had degraded this man. Jesus had lifted this man up, placed him back into a place of belonging within the very society that had found unity and coherence originally in purging him. And Jesus is challenging their entire way of arranging their society, calling them to no longer find unity in their practice of societal sacrifice against this man, but in coming together in the way of mercy. And you can find Jesus referencing this in other places in Matthew 9:13, Matthew 12:7, where Jesus quotes Hosea 6:6. And the question that we have to be attentive of as we're reading this story is, did this society follow this Jesus? Do they follow this radical social revolutionary? And sadly, the answer is no. Now they simply need a new sacrifice. They need a new person to purge. They need a new victim to find unity among themselves in being against. And who do they choose? Well, the story's pretty obvious. They choose Jesus. The way of sacrifice is so ingrained in these people that they unconsciously and without even missing a beat, they simply switch victims, putting Jesus in the place of this man, and they go on as if nothing ever changed. They purge Jesus now from their midst instead. And as Jesus was getting into the boat, it says, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, go home to your people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. Notice that word mercy, and Jesus continually contrasts the way of mercy to the way of sacrifice. The text says, so the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. This man is sent back to teach this society about the way of mercy rather than sacrifice. Having been set free from Legion himself, maybe now he can help get the society free from the same demon too. When a person gets free of collective violence toward a minority, they're not becoming demon possessed or possessed by demons. In a very real sense, they're actually being freed from them. And this is the point of the story. And in all honesty, this is my story. I'm both the demoniac and the crowd all in one. As the crowd, I have seen the humanity of the ones that I used to sacrifice, and it's honestly turned my world upside down. As the demoniac, I've been set free from the Legion, or rather the crowd, the collective violence at the heart of the crowd's unity, to follow the way of mercy instead. And I wish I could claim some credit for it. I didn't go looking for it. It was done to me and for me by others who cared about me. And now I humbly and repentantly simply want to bring others with me. The way of mercy rather than sacrifice really is a better way. In fact, it's the way of God. And what would happen if we began to see the ones that are presently being placed on society's altars? What would happen if we began to see them as our brothers and our sisters? Maybe this is where Jesus starts with all societies that are finding unity in collective violence against a minority. And maybe that's what this story is telling us. And if this is true, then Jesus' work today is no different than it was in the Gospels. Jesus is calling us today to see those whom we have labeled as indecent, as different, as others, as deserving of being purged from within our circles. He's asking us to see them as human once again. He's calling us to embrace the reality that they are our brothers and our sisters, and that they have a place beside us at the table too. You can find this in Luke 19, verse 9. In the story of the demoniac, René Girard, in his book, When These Things Begin, Conversations with Michael Treguer, he writes, we're witnessing the birth of an individual capable of escaping the fatal destiny of collective violence. Jesus says in Matthew 12:7, if you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. Heart group application this week. Where are you still participating with the crowd and sacrificing others? Spend some time this week in contemplation of this question with Jesus, and ask him to show you if you are sacrificing or scapegoating. Maybe it's another family member that you're joining with the rest of your family and being against to find unity. Maybe it's someone at the office that everyone hates and you join in the collective disdain or the ridicule of that person. Maybe it's at church where, in order to fit in, you feel pressured to label someone as less than a child of God or less than your fellow brother or sister. Or maybe it's someone within society that you feel deserves retribution rather than redemption, someone that you feel deserves a justice that is punitive rather than a justice that is restorative, a justice that also restores to them a humanity that in your heart they have been deprived of. And whichever it is, ask Jesus to show you, and he will. Number two, ask Jesus to show you how he thinks and feels towards those who are being sacrificed. Invite him to help you see them the same way that he does. And then ask him to give you the courage to follow the way of mercy toward them rather than sacrifice. And then number three, whatever Jesus shares with you this week, whatever you experience this upcoming week, share that with your heart group. My 11-year-old daughter came to my wife this week and shared with her that she thought that she was speaking poorly of someone else in an effort to become friends with a third party. And she looked at my wife and said, I think I could have been scapegoating, and I don't want to do that anymore. Ask Jesus to give you the heart of a child this week in looking at those who are being sacrificed. Till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. Love as indiscriminately as the sun shines, as indiscriminately as the rain falls. Remember, new creation has come, and now we get the privilege and the enjoyment of enlarging new creation's radically inclusive and restorative perimeter, one human heart at a time. I love each and every one of you, and remember, God does too. I'll see you next week.